ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिदां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथिदां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम्। यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्तुन्नन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्दं न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः। We are continuing our discussion of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Today we have to take up the 57th verse. It's a long exposition of the characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. From 55th to 72nd verse of the second chapter. So, the 55th and 56th verses explained how we can remain in a state of equipoise, a perfect equilibrium of mind, by linking our intellect to a transcendental spiritual ideal. The 56th and 57th verse speak about how the mind of how a spiritually enlightened person's mind reacts to external stimuli. I mean, how does it help us in our everyday interaction with others, in dealing with different problems and duties and responsibilities and challenges? How does spirituality, of any kind of spiritual practice, help us in our everyday life? So the 56th verse mentioned that if when we grow in spiritual life, when we link our mind and intellect to something stable, then we won't be shaken by the reverses, setbacks or adversities in life. Everyone will have to face reverses. No one can live in the world happy all the time. Life can never be a continuous, unbroken succession of happy experiences. It is totally irrational to expect happiness all the time. Unhappiness or lack of happiness is inevitable in our everyday life. So the difference is in the way in which the mind of a spiritually enlightened person or a spiritual seeker reacts to situations, external situations, and how his senses behave in the presence of difficult challenges. So this is a very important point to remember. When we take to higher life, when we begin our spiritual life, actually we are setting a new set of priorities in our life. There is another higher possibility. All these happy and unhappy experiences are part of life in this world. But there is another higher level of existence, higher level of life, And that is possible. And the first step that we take in that direction will give an idea of a higher possibility. And once this higher possibility becomes obvious, then the way we look at the world and all these empirical problems, that way, that method, the perspective undergoes a complete change and transformation. We start looking at the world differently. We start looking at our own challenges in life differently. Not that we will run away from it, no. Running away from a problem is not recommended as a remedy in any scripture. But the way we look at these problems will be different. When there is a higher possibility, then challenges at the empirical level are no more devastating, no more capable of completely shaking the foundations of our conviction. So, dukkheshu anudvigdamana sukheshu vigadaspraha vitaraga bhaya krothaha. So, not shaken in adverse conditions and not jubilant, not over jubilant in pleasant or happy situations. So, raga, bhaya and krodha, these three mental attitudes will slowly disappear. One is extreme infatuation, extreme attachment, extreme liking for certain things, whether they are good or bad for us. Even a kind of extreme infatuation to certain ideas or ways of life or habits, for example, people, situations, even knowing fully well that it is not good for us, it's almost like an invisible chain that binds us. We cannot get out of it. That's the main problem in life, you know. We know intellectually there are many things not good for love, for us. We know very well. But we are not able to really implement that conviction. There are many things in life that we know are harmful. Many kinds of associations, many persons whose association can be harmful, many ideas, books, internets, different websites, different books, different ideas, different accumulated habits. We know they are certainly very harmful. But there is a strange invisible chain that binds us together. We cannot get out of it. That is called raga. And bhaya is the opposite of this, fear. Fear that we know to be totally without any foundation, without any logical explanation, which is totally unfounded, still a kind of fear. And then krodha, and that is anger. So, these are three important mental attitudes that bind us with invisible chains. So, when you are setting your mind on a higher ideal, then these things actually become weaker and weaker. Extreme infatuation may be there, but it loses its intensity because you are actually looking at a higher possibility in life, looking at higher things. So these things, worldly, all these, karaga, dvesha, all this extreme liking, extreme infatuation, extreme fear, extreme hatred, hostility, all these, they are there but they become weaker and weaker. So, that we know very well in our own ordinary life. When we are small children, we consider toys and candies to be very important. But when you grow up there, we may eat candies, we may handle it, but they are no more so very important. That means our priority changes. And as we become intellectually and spiritually wiser and wiser, the many of the things that we normally consider to be very important during the younger days are no more so very important. This sort of evolution of priorities, reprioritization, that's what happens, you know, vita, raga, bhaya, so krodha, that means extreme infatuation, fear and hostility or wrath. All these normally disappear once we become spiritually more enlightened. Then the 57th verse we have to discuss today. Ye sarvatra anabhisneha tattat prapya subha asubham na abhinandati na dveshti tasya prajna pradishthita. It is something to do with the way we behave. So Lord Krishna is actually adding more and more light and shade when he draws the picture of a spiritually enlightened person. So he talks about how the mind of a spiritually enlightened person, not only enlightened person, when we start our spiritual life, when we take the first step, you can find this happening. See, just maybe people who happen to read a very good book, it may be a book on higher philosophy or still better, it may be a holy book, which presents a different possibility to our mind. Immediately we are actually starting on a new journey. The journey can start any moment. Maybe we may not be able to progress and move steadily all the time, but still the journey begins, no doubt about it. And this journey helps us to look at our everyday problems from a different perspective. So the problems are there, that the problems are no more problems as we evolve. We don't consider problems of material life, happiness or unhappiness, pain and pleasure as very, very important. They are there, but they won't be able to have any devastating impact on our whole life. So, yes, sarvatra anabhisneha tattat prapya subha asubham. He's not too much attached. So, attachment here should be understood in the proper perspective. Attachment, there are different types of attachment. The mother's affection for the child, or children's respect for parents, or mutual help, cooperation, all these are examples of positive human relationship, which we call attachment. That's not what is meant here. Here, attachment to certain things, certain habits, ideas and associations, which are actually suicidal, which we know very well. For example, a person who is suffering from high diabetes may be advised by the doctor not to eat sweets or made things, I mean things which contain high sugar. But if this patient has a great attraction for it, that attraction is suicidal. It leads to self-destruction. So there are many things that we know to be very harmful to us. And there is an option, there is a possibility, we would like to get out of this. But we cannot do that. That is called attachment. So, in other words, as we evolve in spiritual life, we will have more control over our own will. That's the first indication. We will have more control on our own will, which we mentioned earlier. Often there is a conflict between what we want to do and what our mind is willing to cooperate with us when we try to do. Mind, of course, creates stumbling blocks, false excuses, procrastinations, postponements. All these are examples of mind playing a deceptive game with itself. So once we take to spiritual life, we will have more control over what we want to do. Because our desire itself gets sublimated. If anyone can develop a good desire, higher desire for something higher, noble and spiritual, then half the battle is won. But all of us have desire. But desire for something higher is the first step towards going beyond desire. People sometimes say, you should not have any desire. You should not have any selfish motive. It's not psychologically, it is not very rational. That's why religion, people don't care for religion. They think religion is telling, saying certain things which are, on the face of it, absolutely unpractical, impractical, not really possible. But the first step in religious life is to have a higher ideal, to have a higher desire, to have a higher motive. Now, once we develop this higher motive for something noble, then what happens? All our desires vanish. And as we evolve still higher, we go beyond desire itself. So, yasarvatra anabhisneha. He is not attached to anything like in a gum. Nobody wants to be attached to certain like a gum. You know, you want to get out of it, but you cannot do that. Mind won't allow you. And if you force your mind, then mind will create some conflicts. There are people, suddenly if you bring about a change in habits, so you can find drug addiction or alcoholism, many of these things at a psychological level. Gita has got a great message. People don't really understand. Frequently, this is an ancient Sanskrit scripture written maybe 5,000 years back. So what has it to do with modern life? People ask this question. But Lord Krishna is actually recommending many problems based on the basic human psychology. What he's saying is, if we can develop this higher desire, even children studying in schools, university students, if they can be trained to develop a higher ideal, higher desire, a sublime desire, then they will be able to be free, keep themselves free from the lower entanglements and this lower chains that bind us, bind our life. So, yes, sarvatra nabhisnega tattat prapya shubha ashubham. That's a higher philosophy. That is, you should be able to remain equipoised, keep the stability of mind, even when something pleasant happens, and also even when something unpleasant happens. Not pleased at receiving or enjoying some good experiences, and not worried too much when the opposite, the unpleasant, happens. So, psychologically speaking, the best way to avoid being devastated by unpleasant experiences is to stop always looking for the pleasant. If one is chasing happiness all the time, then you are heading for unhappiness, because happiness all the time is impossible. So the ability to look at happiness and unhappiness with an equilibrium of mind, this naturally comes as a result of maturity. So that this happens not only in spiritual life, even when we read books, when we devote our whole life to a higher purpose, you find in our mind there is something higher that we are looking for. Not that we run away from daily duties and responsibilities and realities of empirical life, but we always think there is something higher to look for. So that's why Lord Krishna is adding more and more lights and shade, like an artist painting a picture with a brush, more and more strokes, giving complete picture of a spiritually enlightened person. The example is this, the message is this: if we can develop some of these qualities in our everyday life, we will also grow spiritually. So then, yada samkharade chayam kurmongani va sarvashaka indriyan indriyarthebhyah tasya prajna pradishthita. So there are certain, there are certain practices in yoga, for example, you know, yoga is pratyahara. So yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara. Pratyahara is the fifth. Dharana, dhyana, samadhi, sixth, seventh and eighth. So ashtanga yoga. So pratyahara means the ability to withdraw the mind from external objects. Not to close your eyes, no. Or close your ears. It's not physical blocking or closing the doors opening the external world. For the ability to remain eyes opened, still not being affected by the visual objects, when the visual objects are no more able to color our mind, influence our mind, make our mind happy and unhappy. So that stage is called pratyahara. So in yoga, it's called pratyahara. And you find in Vedanta, it is called uparati. That means this withdrawing the senses from external objects. And in devotional philosophy, it is called, you know, ishta devata nishta. You find in all religious traditions. Not ritualistic devotion, not mechanical devotion, not external practices of going to a place of worship and performing some external rituals mechanically. No, not that one. When God becomes a reality in the life of a devotee, then the devotee's mind and senses automatically move away from external objects of sensual pleasures and will be focused on the reality of God. So this happens not only in yoga, not only in Vedanta, but also in the life of a spiritually alert devotee of God, in any religious tradition. The great mystics are examples. They didn't worry about the problems of the world. They may also read newspapers, they may discuss these things. They may also living in this world, maybe living this world of complexities and challenges, but this world doesn't shake them. Because the mind is focused on something higher. So this could happen to devotee. And this is possible in yoga called pratyahara. Pratyahara means you have to withdraw the mind from external objects. And for that, mind needs a counter focus towards it is withdrawn from external objects. And for that, we need a higher ideal. So the first step in spiritual life is to develop a higher spiritual ideal. So this is an example where, you know, where Lord Krishna gives how the mind of a spiritual seeker slowly stops connecting with external objects or stops being influenced by empirical external experiences. This discussion continues slowly, and then there is an interesting illustration in the 57th verse. Yada samkharade chayam kurmungani vasarvasaha indriyani indriyarthebhya tasya prajna pradishthita. A tortoise withdrawing its limbs. The example of a tortoise is given here. A tortoise is its greatest defense is a strong outer skin, which is very solid, very thick, very strong. So other animals cannot eat and kill and eat it because it has this protection. It draws all its body and keeps it hidden under this strong outer shell. That's the only defense mechanism for a tortoise. Like that, a spiritually enlightened person, he is able to draw in his external, his senses. He may be living this world, but through a filtering mechanism, a psychological filtering mechanism, he is able to live in the world, but unaffected by the world. You can live in the world, but that doesn't mean you should be worldly. So worldly mindedness and life in the world are two different things. One can live in the world without being worldly minded. So Sri Ramakrishna gives the illustration. Suppose you want to cross a river with a ferry, a boat. You should see that the boat should not have any hole. The water will enter the boat, it will capsize. So water should not be within the boat. The boat should be on the water. The water should not be within the boat. Like that, the world needs should not be in our mind. We should be able to live in the world. The world is like water. Life is a boat. So we can live in any complex competitive world with all its challenges and difficulties and insecurities, all this. If we can develop this outer shell, like the strong outer shell of a tortoise. So the outer shell here is a kind of filtering mechanism of the mind. The ability to practice this pratyahara, as we call in yoga, or uparadhi, as we call in Vedanta, or again, devotion to a chosen deity in traditional religious devotion practices. Not mechanical, it doesn't help us much. You can see in any religious tradition, St. Teresa of Avila, St. John of the Cross, Christian tradition, there are innumerable devotees in Hindu, Buddhist traditions, Sufi traditions. There were great men and women for whom God was a reality, not a motto or a slogan. So you find the mind was always dedicated to that higher ideal. So naturally, the senses are not caught by the world. So the water of worldliness was not within the boat of life. And living the world, but we need not be within the world. Now, there are different practices that spiritual traditions present before us to how to really practice this. Now, the idea is very good and very wonderful, appears to be. I mean, how to link your mind to higher ideal, the Atman, and how to train the mind to react to the external stimuli without being affected by that, and how to draw in the senses like the tortoise withdraws its whole body and keeps it hidden within the outer shell. These are ideas. But how do we really practice in our office, in our workplace? So there are many interesting illustrations from various systems of philosophy. Well, in the Yoga Sutra, there is one interesting sutra. It comes in Samadhipada. Maitri Karuna Mudida Ubekshanam Sukhadukha Punya Vishayanam Bhavanataha Chitta Prasadanam. How to obtain Chitta Prasada? This Chitta Prasada is a very precious thing. Chitta Prasada means a kind of inner contentment, which is very precious. Even to remain mentally and physically healthy, we need Chitta Prasada. If you don't have Chitta Prasada, anxiety, neurosis, depression, melancholia, all these problems, we have everything but not really happy within, looking for something. So that something is Chitta Prasada. Prasada literally means a kind of inner poise, serenity, inner contentment. When we reach a kind of mental satisfaction or contentment, we feel that there is nothing more to look for. It's a very precious thing. If a super rich man goes to a doctor and complains of insomnia, lack of sleep, it's all because he has no Chitta Prasada. This can happen to great scientists who have committed suicide, great writers who have gone crazy and became alcoholic or addicted to drugs, intellectuals, writers, painters, musicians, great men who have achieved and accomplished great things, not literature, business, industry, you find. This lack of chitta prasada, where you are in perfect peace with your own mind. You may shake hands, well-dressed, hi, how are you, in a diplomatic conference, but a man needs a few pills to get 2 hours of sleep. So his prasada is just a contortion of the facial muscles. Mind is not enjoying prasada. Chitta means the mental system. The emotions, attitudes and feelings and vasanas, samskaras, impressions, memories, all constitute this chittam. And prasada means when that mental system, chittam, is in a state of natural, spontaneous serenity, equipoise, equilibrium, perfect inner harmony and balance. That is called chitta prasada. So for that, yoga psychologist Patanjali and Vyasa, the commentator, and Shankaracharya, who wrote Vyasa Bhashya Vivarana, Vijnana Bhikshu, Vajaspati, Bhoja, many, all these commentators who wrote extensive commentaries on yoga, sutras, they've explained this. Maitri Karuna Mudita Upekshanam Sukha Dukkha Punya Apunya Vishayanam Bhavanataha Chitta Prasada. So Maitri means friendship. Kind of. Well, suppose you meet fellow spiritual seekers. You should be friendly with them. I mean, the whole humanity, people whom you are likely to meet in different life situations, whether workplace or office, anywhere, they are divided into 4 categories. You don't have anybody who doesn't belong to one of these 4 categories. Maitri, those who are like you more or less, who share your views and attitudes and ideas. More or less like us, they are also fellow pilgrims in this life. So with them we should keep in good contact with them. Friendship. And the Karuna, there are those who may not have an occasion to read or understand or study religious scriptures or study religious ideas. They may be interested, they are good people, but they didn't get an opportunity and they didn't have the good fortune to connect with any of these spiritual ideas. 2nd category. The 3rd category, those who are more advanced than us in spiritual life. So these are 3 people. They are tolerably good people. You have no problem with them. Then there is a 4th category, and that exhausts all possible classifications. These 8 billion people inhabiting this earth belongs to one of these 4 categories. Those who are full of negative attitudes. If you tell them anything about any good thing, oh, it's all absolutely meaningless nonsense. And if you have some association with them, you are sure to return mentally broken, in total conflict. Whatever convictions and ideas that you have tried to develop, which have helped you in our life, they manage to shake those convictions. And anything, whatever may be your ideas, your path of spiritual life, they are able to shake your own faith in it through skepticism or casting doubt on whatever you are doing. Now, if you are a beginner in spiritual life, it's worse than potassium cyanide. Because if you associate with the wrong person, that's enough for you to be completely shattered and broken if you are just a beginner in spiritual life. Just like kindergarten child being told by another person, oh, there is no point in studying, don't study, don't go to school or something. The child may not have much liking for being forced to go to school, so he may, oh, this is okay, fine. It's bad for the child, for his future. So, Maitri Karuna Mudita Ubekshanam. To those spiritual seekers who are like us more or less, we should be friendly. Maitri means friendship, a sense of friendship. Discuss with them, associate with them, that be good for our spiritual life. You should be very careful with whom you associate. It's not a proclamation against democracy or egalitarianism. It is only a natural human instinct that we have to develop. We should not hate anyone. We should not do any harm to anyone. We should not have any unpleasant attitude towards anybody. But at the same time, we should be very careful with whom we associate, whom we consider to be our close friends. We all do that. But this idea has been elevated to a kind of spiritual, mental filtering mechanism that can save us in life. Then Karuna means sympathy for those, towards those who are interested in spiritual ideas, higher ideas, but don't have the good fortune to study or understand those things. We should have sympathy. We should not look down upon them. If we tell, oh, these fellows are not spiritually, I don't care for it. That's all wrong. Because you may not tell them openly, but it does a great harm to our own mind. So we should not look down upon anybody. Contempt for those people who may be less advanced than us. Then those who are more advanced, we should not be jealous of them. So both contempt for those are behind us and jealousy towards those who are ahead of us in spiritual life. Both are equally bad. The fourth category is, you know, upeksha means indifference. Indifference not with contempt, because contempt or anger, hatred or hostility will poison our mind. But what to do? Keep a long distance from them without hating anybody. So that's an important thing. And then, now, these four disciplines constitute a unique mental filtering mechanism. You can carry it with you wherever you go and you'll be safe. That's the idea behind. Punya apunya vishayanam sukha dukkha punya apunya vishayanam. So we should have this attitude. Good, for good things we should be friendly. For unpleasant, negative associations we should not hate, but keep a distance. Mentally, physically, we may not be able to keep a distance with people who may be very skeptical about everything. But mentally, we can use a filtering mechanism. This is necessary to develop chitta prasada, because mind should not be shaken either by contempt or looking down upon those who are less advanced than us, or lack of appreciation for those who are ahead of us, or close association with people whose association can shake you, take you away from your own path. They may cast doubts and conflicts in your mind like that. Chitta prasada. So, this is the yoga approach. In Vedanta, there is a stronger approach, but it is philosophical. You know, Vedanta approaches the problem of reality from four different angles: paramarthika, vyavahariga, pratibhasika, and asat. I'm not going to the metaphysics of this, which I discussed earlier, but in the present context, paramarthika and vyavaharika, that's what I'm focusing on. Paramarthika means the absolute reality, the trans-empirical reality. In Vedanta, Atman Brahman is the only permanent reality. It is eternal. It is beyond birth, beyond death, beyond decay. It remains the same, the past, present, and future, and so on. It can only be experienced. It cannot be explained in words. It is eternal, immortal. Vyavahariga relates to the world in which we are living, the world that we associate with. That's Vyavahariga. So the idea that this world, with all its complexities, really is not permanent. It is a changing phenomenon. And this is well known to even a primary school student who is studying physics. Everyone knows, intellectually at least, that this world, the universe, was not in this, it was not like this some billions of years back, and will not be like this some several millions later. So we know that very well, that this earth or the universe undergoes changes, maybe in course of millions of years or billions of years, but never remains the same. So whatever is subjected to changes is non-eternal. So also, all the experiences that we encounter in this world are impermanent. So this idea can be kept in mind. That will help us to keep our mind linked to higher transcendental ideal. And that will help us to practice equanimity of mind, inner balance, and mental equilibrium. So this is the 58th verse. Now we go to the 59th. Vishaya vinivartanti nirāhārasya dehinah rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtvā nivartate. So Lord Krishna is explaining how, as we evolve in spiritual life, we are able to remain in a state of perfect freedom from desire, from anger, from infatuation, from hostility. We are able to remain in a state of perfect mental equilibrium. I already stated at the beginning of the discussion of the characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person, at the beginning I mentioned that these ideas are discussed. The list of the fundamental characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person is presented before us with one important purpose. These characteristics can be practiced by any spiritual seeker. That's the very, very purpose of giving this, presenting this list. The Shankaracharya writes this very, in a very profound language. He has already written this earlier. The purpose of mentioning or giving the whole list is to explain to you that these things you can practice. Sarvatrahi adhyarma shastre kudath lakshanani yani tani eva sadhanani upadishyante. So in all spiritual literature, if you find, or in any higher philosophical literature, if you find the characteristics of a wise person is given, the list is given, those can be practiced by us. Not imitation, but internalization. Then we also will one day become a spiritually enlightened person. You find a little bit of these ideas you find in the life of Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, in the pre-Christian sophists, thinkers of ancient Greece. Very striking similarity of approach to life and its problems in the writings of the pre-Christian Greek thinkers, and also in Vedanta you find. You'd remember Heraclitus and Buddha were contemporaries, 6th century BC more or less. So if you read the life of Socrates, for example, the way, the wisdom, the equanimity, the ability to look for something more profound, eternal, transcendental, looking beyond the phenomenal empirical experiences, looking beyond today, beyond the present, beyond what is visible. So you find that emphasis. So if you read all these, you find these characteristics can be practiced, can become a method, a means for us to become eventually spiritually enlightened. So Vishaya Vinivartande Nirahara Dehinaha Resavarjam Rasopyasya Param Drishtva Nivartade. So two stages are mentioned here. At the first stage of this practice of withdrawal from external temptations or external attractions, first these objects no more are able to tempt us. There are no more great attractions for us. Mind automatically remains free from the attraction. Second, the mind loses its natural relish or taste for those things. That are two different things. First, objects are there, but we are able to restrain. Secondly, there is no need to restrain because you do not consider these external things as anything of significance. So, two stages in the development of a spiritually enlightened person are mentioned in these verses. Before that, we will have interaction. So you can, you are most welcome to take up any subject or ask questions on what we already discussed today or the previous sessions.
I just need a little help with some of the spelling. You brought up the Chitra Prasada.
Oh, yeah.
How do you spell that so I can look it up?
Chitta Prasada. So you may, in English, be C-H-I-T-T-A-P-R-A-S-A-D-A. Approximately, this is how it could be.
Thank you.
Chitta Prasada. Chitta means a mental world. Chitta means memories, our ego identities, or our thought streams, all together constitute the mental world. Prasada, actually, it can only be experienced when you reach a point of inner contentment where you don't feel the need to look for anything else or anything more. That kind of inner contentment is called prasada. So it is very important, though we may not use that word. Normally we in ordinary life, whenever we look for something, it's because we don't have it already with us. Unless we get a little bit of chitta prasada, we won't be able to have any kind of contentment or satisfaction with anything. When you do your job perfectly well, it's a manifestation of chitta prasada. But it's not very profound. It's just an aspect of it. But you may have to do the same work again next day. That's a different thing. So that effect is limited. But then in spiritual life, when we are convinced that we have something much more profound, much more transcendental, something that this world cannot bring, money cannot buy, when we reach that level of inner contentment, it is chitta prasada as understood in the context of Gita.
Swamiji, you mentioned raga. From my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, raga has the idea of coloring or dyeing the mind. And the term vairagya, I was wondering if you could maybe speak a little bit about that.
Raga actually means infatuation, extreme liking, extreme attraction to anything. That's a raga. It is not see, for example, you want to do a work. You have a desire to do a work. You have to finish your duty. It cannot be called raga. Raga is something that is spiritually enslaving. It makes you a slave of it. A strong infatuation to things that normally are not good for us. And we are aware of it, but still we cannot get out of it. That peculiar mental infatuation is the implication of the word raga. Vairagya means a sense of renunciation, a sense of dispassion to us. That is vairagya. Vairagya is the means for putting an end to raga, all these things. That is a spiritual quality we have to develop slowly. Total dispassion or kind of total renunciation of things that we know to be harmful to us. I can quote one parable from the Bible. It said, you can see the parable where a foolish person built a house on sand, and when there was a big storm and rains, and then it collapsed, it fell. So the house is standing on sand, very shaky, very weak foundation of worldly enjoyments, momentary enjoyments. But the other one built the house on a rocky foundation, you know, solid rock. So when there was a strong wind, lightning, rains, it didn't collapse, it didn't fall, because the foundation was strong. So the Chitta Prasada is actually some kind of a rocky foundation that helps you to withstand the storms and thunder of life as a whole. So if the foundation is some momentary impulse or happiness or satisfaction, then the slightest challenge, problem can cause it to collapse. So when you link yourself to a higher spiritual ideal, it's the way to attain Chitta Prasada. So it's like a foundation of rock.
You know, I might be able to give an example of that. In 1967, I went to India and came back, and there was a fire in the house. We lost everything. And it didn't bother me for some reason, but I lost everything at the time. The question is, what are the characteristics of someone who experiences Brahman Nirvana?
Brahman Nirvanam Ruchati. That is how this whole chapter ends. So, Esha Shanti Siddhi Partha Nainam Prapi Vimukhati Sthitvasyam Antakale Api Brahman Nirvanam Ruchati. So, you find the 72nd verse of this chapter is like this. What it means is, that you identify or you experience your identity and oneness with Brahman. That's the idea behind. See, even a casual visit, maybe you must have visited many holy places. So indirectly you had many holy associations. Did you visit some of the ashramas in the Himalayas and elsewhere? So that may have given you an idea of something transcendental. So that was enough for you to look upon this terrible loss of your house and everything with a sense of equanimity. Yeah. Even casual reading of books also can give us this inner poise, maturity. That's true. If you teach philosophy, it may be different from teaching technology. I'm not championing the cause of humanities or philosophy, whatever it is. When you read or when you teach books dealing with some higher possibilities, spiritual possibilities, even intellectually, when you are dealing with those ideas, that can give you a kind of inner poise, really. Because a remote understanding of a distant higher possibility of human life and existence is presented before you. And that helps you to look at these peripheral, empirical things from a different perspective. So a casual visit to the Himalayas helped you to look at the loss of your house, which is burned down, with a kind of equanimity that is really wonderful. Even intellectual acquaintance, if we do that with some kind of intense feeling or anything, to that extent goes deeper into our system. Yeah.
You know, Swamiji, in the background of this, and I can say this today and hopefully in the future, that the greatest treasure that we have is our Atman, our soul.
Yeah.
That is priceless. That's something that stays with us, even though we may go through the sufferings, the calamities, the misfortunes, and so on and so forth. That's always with us, and that's a wonderful spiritual anchor.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, the first 55th verse, Atmanev Atmana Tushtaka Siddhaprajnastadochyati. So Prajahadi Adakaman Sarvan Parthamanogadan Atmani Eva Atmanatushtaha. So a spiritually enlightened person is contented and happy. He has got the Sitta Prasada. Not because he gets something from external world, but because he's every minute he's experiencing his identity with Atman. See, after all, when we react to an external situation, it often reflects what we think about ourselves, really speaking. The maturity in our behavior, interaction with others, is a reflection of what we think about ourselves, how we interpret and define ourselves. If you think, well, I'm not a child, I'm a grown-up person, I'm a philosopher, I'm a Vedantin. If you got a strong conviction, even this conviction will help you to deal with different life situations with a greater maturity, intellectual maturity, spiritual maturity. Because you have an understanding of what you are, your definition of yourself, your understanding, your interpretation of yourself reflects in the way you look upon others and other things. So that's why Siddhaprajna Atmani Eva Atmana Tushtaha. Every minute he is experiencing his non-distinction, his complete identity with Atman. And as you mentioned, that's a treasure. So if you have got $1 trillion in the bank, you won't be fighting the street for a $20 bill. If somebody takes away your $20 bill, $5 bill, you don't go and fight with him. Because you have billions of dollars in the bank. Well, you already let him take it away, you think so. So when you are aware of your own spiritual dimension, your spiritual grandeur, that will help you to look at the world from a different angle. That's why I say, our understanding, our definition, our interpretation of what we are reflects and influences the way we interact with others. That's an important thing. Thank you. So, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.